Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Melanie C., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, September 6, 2018, and this is a 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. And today we are reading from the Big Book. We are in the chapter to Wives. We are going to be reading page 106 today, starting with paragraph 1. Sometimes there were other women, reading through 5 paragraphs, which ends on page 107, death was often near. Today's readers are the 12 steps, Elena A.M., the 12 traditions, Laura A., and reading the text today is Cheryl A. and Liat T.D. The share ID numbers for yesterday's 10 a.m. meeting was 11880. 11,880, that was for Wednesday, September 5th. And then for this morning, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, that share ID number is 11883, 11,883 for September 6th, Thursday. The OA preamble. The Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Elena A.M. to read the 12 steps.
My name is Elena A.M. I'm from Pennsylvania, and here are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for this service opportunity, and I pass.
Thank you, Elena A.M. I will now ask Laura A. to please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Laura A., recovering compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for letting me do service. I pass.
Thank you, Laura A. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book in the chapter to wives on page 106, starting with sometimes, the first paragraph, sometimes there were other women, reading through 5 paragraphs today, ending with death was often near us. And I've asked Cheryl A. to please open us up by reading that and then focusing her discussion on those 5 paragraphs. Thank you. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning, Melanie. Thanks so much for your service. Hi, this is Cheryl A., recovered compulsive overeater from Boston, Massachusetts. Sometimes there were other women. How heartbreaking was the discovery, how cruel to be told they understood our men as we did not. The bill collectors, the sheriffs, the angry taxi drivers, the policemen, the bums, the pals, and even the ladies they sometimes brought home. Our husbands thought we were so inhospitable. Joy killer, nag, wet blanket, that's what they said. Next day they would be themselves again, and we would forgive and try to forget. We have tried to hold the love of our children for their father. We have told small tots that father was sick, which was much nearer the truth than we realized. They struck the children, kicked out the door panels, smashed treasured crockery, ripped the keys out of pianos. In the midst of such pandemonium, they may have rushed out threatening to live with the other woman forever. In desperation, we have even got tight ourselves, the drunk to end all drunks. The unexpected result was that our husbands seemed to like it. Perhaps at this point we got a divorce and took the children home to father and mother. Then we were severely criticized by our husband's parents for desertion. Usually we did not leave. We stayed on and on. We finally sought employment ourselves as destitution faced us and our families. We began to ask medical advice as the sprees got closer together. The alarming physical and mental symptoms, the deepening pall of remorse, depression, and inferiority that settled down on our loved ones. These things terrified and distracted us. As animals on a treadmill, we have patiently and wearily climbed, falling back in exhaustion after each futile effort to reach solid ground. Most of us have entered the final stage with its commitment to health resorts, sanitariums, hospitals, and jails. Sometimes they were screaming delirium and insanity. Death was often near. So this, let me just start my timer. This is such a powerful passage, and it's one that for so many years in 12-step, I kind of didn't really think that any of this related to me because it was speaking to the family members around me who were impacted by my disease and much of my deep compulsive eating. In fact, none of my compulsive eating was done when I was married. So my husband actually hasn't seen me in that eating state. But what this teaches me and tells me is there's a full-blown disease called compulsive overeating, alcoholism. Same thing. And while my husband didn't see me and tried to control me in my eating, my parents did that. My friends did that when I was in college. I have lots of stories to tell about how they tried to do that. But what this teaches me is two things from my perspective and then still from my husband's perspective. From my perspective, I'm reading this and thinking, my God, this is the unmanageability of what of how this disease manifests itself in my life, to think about the things that I have done with the food, but then without the food, because there's an aspect of emotional sobriety that brings me to my knees in humility as I think about what my husband has had to deal with. Because while he hasn't seen me in my serious eating, while I was married, I was also unrecovered. And he had to deal with unbelievable levels of unmanageability, of emotional outburst, of yelling, of screaming, of not paying our bills when I was supposed to, even though we certainly had money to do that. There's so many ways that I acted out in disease. And the God's honest truth is that there wasn't much he could do until I was ready to do everything necessary to follow the directions to lead a manageable life. I've had layers over the 30 years I've been in program of sinking, of peeling back the onion and sinking deeper, 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 down, down, down into the basement where this disease lives in all its glory. And this is just such an unbelievable reminder of how bad this can be and how nobody out there, not my family, not my friends, not anybody, can do this for me. They can't control it away any more than I can. And I can't control it. They can't control it. And I can't control it. Only a higher power can do that. And it drives me to such amazing levels of willingness, because God knows I don't want that manageability for myself or my family ever again. And the safety net are these 12 steps and all that it teaches me to do. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Cheryl A. Now it's open for others to make their comments on those five paragraphs. Yep, we're on page 106, reading through five paragraphs, starting with paragraph one, and we're going to find out what the directions in the big book say about these five paragraphs. Who would like to share?
Marilyn T.
This is Janice P.M.
Marilyn T.
Janice P.M.
And Janice. Gotcha. Thanks, Janice.
Kat K.
Kat K.
Mary G.
Okay, hey, Mary G. Got you just in time. Let's get started. I have Marilyn T., Janice P.M., Kat K., and Mary G. Good morning, Marilyn.
Hi, Melanie. Thank you so much for moderating in your service. Everybody on the line, this is Marilyn T. from Northern California, a recovered compulsive overeater. Wow, that was some five paragraphs, and it really brought home the nature of the disease and how it affects everyone. I really related to Cheryl speaking. She was right on with a lot of it, the unmanageability of unrecoveredness in this disease. You know, how hard it is just to put down the food, then how hard it is to get spiritual recovery and emotional recovery. I've been through so many stages of that and have taken my family, which would be my family of origin, as well as my ex-husband, as well as my child, through this disease. And it manifests in so many different ways. It isn't, you know, yes, there's the food and the weight, but then there, for me, it was, I raged. I was a rager. And I know that's part of the disease now. I used to think it was just, you know, a product of my environment. My family did it, but that's not it. That is just my responses of not having a spiritually fit way of living. And it, families are ruined. Families that love you are ruined, whether it's infidelity or any of the things you've done, the bank taking your family to bankruptcy, it goes on and on. Our disease is widespreading. It doesn't just hurt us. And but thank God there is a way out. I want to end it on that I have never had the spiritual fitness, maturity, grit. That was something I talked with my sponsor this morning about. You have to have grit to be able to do this program. You have to have a power greater than yourself. You have to be 2 feet into this program to get the three-legged stool, which was brought up, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. You have that stool has to be even legged. All parts of you have to be level to be a productive human being in society. And what a joy it is to have recovery. It is hard work, as they say. It is not. It's an easy program for complicated people, but we have to keep trying. We have to have true grit to be able to reap the promises of the 12 steps. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn T. Janice P.M., you're next, and then Kat will come after you.
Well, you called me, Melanie. You called
I
me,
did.
Melanie. Okay, good morning to you, and thank you so much. And, it's so nice to be here today. My goodness, what an apropos paragraphs for me, because I not only was... And my husband wasn't, and then, of course, my son became one. So I was the mother, and I was the wife. A compulsive overeater. Yes, you know, I never hit my child. I never really hit him. But let me tell you what I did do with this disease. I was emotionally and mentally abusive because of my actions, my insane actions. My poor husband used to say, I used to be tired. I'd have some cookies or devil dogs, whatever I knew that would drug me out. And I would just fall asleep. So when he'd come home from the office, I'd be still sleeping. And he would say, no, don't bother her. Don't, she's tired. Well, naturally, he didn't want to bother me because God forbid when I woke up, he didn't know how I was going to be. And, you know, I mean, the insane behaviors of my disease, there's one particular one that I'll never forget. It was, holiday time, Christmas tree time. And I had so many resentments against him. Now, you know, it wasn't him, it was me. It was because he didn't always do what I wanted him to do. And he never could do, because he could never please me. I was never satisfied. I was a ball of confusion. You know, he'd come in the house and he didn't know what the heck the environment would be. But anyway, this particular Christmas, I don't know what he did or what he didn't do, the blame game, you know. And I said, okay, I'll show you, after I put up all the tree myself. Poor me. He never helped me, you know. And I took everything down. I took the whole Christmas tree down. And I said, I'll show them. This is the unresolved conflicts that I had. And the poor guy, he didn't know what hit him. No Christmas traces, and I'm not having Christmas. I'll show the neighbors. You know how we do. Well, anyway, you know, those are the insane behaviors of this disease, you know. And then I would get self-pity. Oh, and it was always their fault. And I was always trying to tell my son, I only have one, gossip about my husband. I mean, that would ruin anybody mentally, always gossip about them, never about me, because I didn't really do anything until I, of course, got into the program and could see my character defects. Well, anyway, you know, that's what happened, and we know all of the things that I did do and cause, and then I try to get medical advice from, for my son, trying to manage, trying to fix everybody. Then I wanted to run away, of course, because that would solve the problem. Well, let me tell you, today is so different. I am so grateful to the grace of my higher power, whom I choose to call God, that I had a turn. I had a turn before my husband passed away, and I became the woman and the wife, the mother that God wants me to become and to be. And why? Because of the 12 steps. My environment was not credible. It was terrible. You know, so this disease does has an effect on everyone that I touch. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Janice PM. Kay, you're next, and then Mary will come after you.
Hi, Kat Kay, recovered compulsive overeater. May I be heard?
You can. Hey, good morning.
Okay, fabulous. So these paragraphs, when the reader started reading them, I was like, wow, this is just insane. But then I think back to my own history, and of course, my mind is, you know, being the oldest of three siblings, my mind is always into comparison mode. And I just think about how much living in chaos was normalized for me. My mom has this disease, and yelling and screaming and coming into the house constantly feeling like I had to always walk on eggshells. And then realize that in my own disease, I created my own household to be just like the one I grew up in, my own household. And it wasn't until this program that it definitely affects my husband, for example. He met me when we weren't married yet, but he had been trained basically to basically at night, you know, when I would be in a mood, in a bad mood, he was basically trained to give me a cookie, because if not, I would have us both go walking the streets of New York City looking for junk food in the middle of the night. So to avoid that, he would have junk food in his backpack on his walk home. He'd stop and buy it so he didn't have to be made to leave at 2 a.m. to go get me junk food. I mean, it was just the level of insanity that I had brought to our relationship. And of course, him being a normal eater, he didn't think it was a problem. He just like, oh, she likes her nightly sweets. But it just became, I just realized the impact as I'm reading this, you know, and I can make judgments all day long, infidelity, not infidelity, whatever the circumstances are, but I have created my own chaos. And for me, these five chapters characterize walking on eggshells, causing everybody to live in fear, not knowing what your reactions, what you're going to do to cause harm today will be, like the tornado that whirls in the lives of others. And another thing is just the amount of chaos that we can bring. So I just want to say, as I reflect on this, that I certainly relate in my own ways, and the self-pity I had felt for poor me, even though I was bringing so much chaos, I didn't realize till I came into this program. So thank you so much for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Kat K. And we'll move on to Mary G. for our next share. But right after Mary, I'll open up the lines again for those that want to comment on page 106. The first five paragraphs, starting with sometimes there's other women, and ends with death was often near us, and we'll be interested in seeing what you see that the directions are that they're talking about here in the big book for us. So Mary G., would you go ahead, and then we'll open up again.
Yes. Hi, this is Mary G. from Arizona, currently in Minnesota. Can I be heard?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. You know, when I was first listening to these paragraphs, I thought the circumstances were so different than what was the circumstances in my life. But as soon as it came to, perhaps at this point, we got a divorce, well, what really shocked me into an awareness that my life was unmanageable was after 4 years of marriage, I had lost my weight 6 months after we had gotten married. And I thought that was the problem. I thought my problem was that I was fat, you know, and so my uncontrollability, my unmanageability of my life, I never took step one completely. Yes, I admitted I was powerless over food, but, you know, I didn't see my life as being unmanageable. I just thought this is how normal people live. You know, this is okay. This is how I lived. And, you know, this was how I was taught by my mother. I was a real rager. I was a total controller. You know, I had to know everything about where my husband was going. I wanted to know what his thoughts were. And I wanted to be the center of his life. You know, this is what I thought marriage was. I was so deluded. You know, and when he asked me for a divorce, I was never so shocked. And I just told him, I said, no, I don't believe in divorce. A side note, we are still very happily married, just celebrated 13 years. But the thing was, is that I knew I couldn't change him because I was in these rooms. I had heard the truth, but I still hadn't gotten the fact that I had to change. I was the problem. You know, if I'm not the problem, you know, there is just no solution. And I went to another program that focuses mainly on relationships, and there's where I started my recovery process. You know, the food was down. Yes, that was true. And so I had the clarity to really look at my behaviors and to think, oh, my gosh, you know, no wonder my husband was, you know, like treading on eggshells. He didn't know what kind of mood I was ever going to be in. You know, it was just insane. And today, you know, I have learned that, you know, first of all, I don't need to be the center of his life. You know, he has a higher power, and hopefully that's who the center of his life is. And hopefully I am no longer the center of my life. You know, I don't have to be always, you know, in control, always know everything. You know, I wanted to know exactly where my husband was. And my reasoning was, well, if anything would happen to him and I was questioned by the police, oh, my gosh, heaven forbid if I didn't know. It was all about me, how I would look to other people. And, you know, that was just part of the craziness of my disease. And, you know, I'm just so happy that today I don't have to live like that. I just read this and I think, you know, the treadmill, that treadmill of always doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. I did that in the food, and I certainly did that in life. Thank you. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary G. The lines are now open for additional fellows to comment on those five paragraphs on page 106. Let's see what the directions in the big book say to us about this topic.
Mary Lee R. and Eugene Orton.
Katie G. from Boston.
Katie G.
Lisa J.R.
Sherry K.B. Lisa J.R.
Stacy G.
Stacy G.
Did you get Mary Lee, Melanie?
I did. Hey, thanks. Yeah, I did. Very first one. Yeah. And that, anybody after Stacy G?
Jordan
Liz
L.
T.
Jordan L. and Liz T. Thanks so much. Okay, Mary Lee R., Katie G., Sherry KB, Lisa JR, Stacy G., Jordan L., and Liz T. Good morning to you, Mary Lee.
Oh, good morning, Melanie, and all my pod mates. Good morning. Boy, a lot of dittos. I don't think my mouth works so well early in the morning, but Spirit just said, you get to get in here and share a bit. So my husband met me in the early 60s when I was a brand new flight attendant, and we got weighed once a month, and if you gained 3 pounds, you were off the line without pay. So eating disorders were pretty common, and starving, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then fast forward to the last 30 days of my husband's life, and he'd been around program, and he'd seen me. 2005 was when I finally got recovered with my food addiction. And one of the things he said was, Mary Lee, please don't ever stop enlarging your spiritual life. Talk about, you know, learning programs. So now we fast forward a year and a half, and I have recently started dating. And my scale went into my bag, and this gentleman was barbecuing at his house, and I took my scale out, and he said, what is that? And I said, well, you know, I can see an elephant weighing 4 ounces, so I like to weigh and measure my food. And then we talked a bit about it later, and I'm just so grateful because I don't ever want to go back to that hell. I mean, my husband saw me lose 100 pounds, and then he saw me gain 102 pounds, and then he saw me lose another 100 pounds. And it's such an awful merry-go-round for the people that love us. And, you know, we're just grateful that we have people that speak our language. And I didn't even look at the time, so I think that's probably enough for me. Thank you for letting me share this morning. Bye.
Thank you, Mary Lee R. Katie G., you're next, and then Sherry KB will come after you.
Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, everyone. This is Katie G., recovered in Boston, and I just had to jump on the line, too. I think for so long I didn't think that my disease affected anyone, and, poor me. I was the victim. Look at what my family did to me, and I love that these pages are bringing up, look what I did to my family. And it's not just, in a state of abstinence, it's just, or in a state of eating, it's all the things I did when I was not eating. And I so clearly see the chaos that and the harms that I caused my family, the fears that I ignited in them. They wouldn't know who they were going to get. But as a recovered woman, I recently married and see the ways in which that I really need to continue to grow up. And that's really what this program is about for me. You know, like when I was first in, I hit a relapse early on, and I had a sponsor say to me, I can't help you anymore. I have to let you go. And some people in the program say that that's being fired. I actually feel like for me, that's actually learning the lesson that my behaviors have consequences, and that I'm an adult. And, my husband, God love him, he is a blessing from God, and he is teaching me each and every day. I want to love him the way I want to be loved. Like, I demand that he, I want to take him hostage, as other people have said. I want to stuff him in. I want to know, who he is and what he's doing. And that's because of my own insecurities. That's because of my own history where I have had affairs emotionally, physically, not on him, thank you, God. But, I don't trust because I know that I have not been a trustworthy woman. But he is not my whipping boy, and he is not there to fulfill all my needs. What is so amazing is learning slowly over time. You know, God put this man in my life so that I could learn the hard lessons that I don't want to learn. Like, he needs space and trust, space and trust. You know, he doesn't need me to be asking him a million questions when he walks in the door. He doesn't need me to be nagging him and accusing him and all that. He needs me to show up as an adult and to love him by living my own life, right? Like, we're two people, and I don't know how to do that. Like, I know how to be a victim. I know how to be manipulative. And thank you, God, for all of you who are teaching me how to be a woman of honor, dignity, and grace. And I am not done. I am so not done. I am so a beginner. I am so learning how to be an adult in this world and in my relationships. And thank you, God, that like I haven't gone down so far that this man is screaming for the hills. So just grateful to continue to learn with all of you. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Katie G. Sherry KB, you're next. And then Lisa JR will come after you.
Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, everybody. Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for your service, Melanie, and everybody on the line. And welcome to the wives, two wives. Listening to everybody and reading these paragraphs, when I first started reading to wives, which I haven't read very much, I used to make it all about my husband. You know, this is about my husband. This is not about me or, anything like that. And so for years, I thought I was an emotional eater, that I just ate at everything and everybody. And it was my way. I grew up with a rageaholic father, so I never wanted to rage. I was always afraid of my anger and all that. But what I did is I raged with the food at people. That's what I did, especially my loved ones. I raged at them by eating at them and blaming them, making it all about them, that it was all their fault, and then that's why I had to eat, don't you know? Because, you're not doing what I want, so instead of me really telling you how I feel, I ate at you instead. And that's where that's how I raged. I raged with eating my food at you. And, I'll never forget this. I think it was about a year ago, at least, I was talking to a fellow, fellow visionary in the program, and, you know, I felt like, you know, for years it was always about my husband, it wasn't about me, and he did things, and that's why I ate, or when I was an abstinent, this was before getting recovered and through the steps, I was such a controlled person around my food, and it had to be this and that, and we had to only go here and there, and, you know, it was a self-imposed prison, even being abstinent, white knuckling it. I was in a self-imposed prison. Well, I, you know, get into this work realizing, you know, I had my part that contaminated my marriage by eating, you know, when I wasn't there, or I used my food like my lover, you know, that I hid and met and, you know, whatever I did with that. But this is what really got me, is this visionary we were talking about a year ago, and she said, you know, I left my husband, I divorced him, I'm alone in my house a year later, and you know what, I'm still having the same feelings about all that stuff. She said, but my husband's not here anymore, it's just me. And that, you know what, that really took my breath away, because here I am with all this stuff, all these years blaming, and you know, when it is, it's really me. It's really my disease. And that, you know, that's really something to look at, to really look at my part. And thank God for the invisible column that we use on step four, because if I didn't look at my part in this, that eating, that I caused contamination in my marriage, I would have never known it had I not done the work this way. And thank God for God. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry KB. Lisa JR, you're next, and then Stacy G.
Oh, thank you, everybody, for being here. Lisa J.R., gratefully recovered by God's grace and mercy today. Love that paragraph, kicked out door panels, broken crockery. Well, you know, I married late. Being the selfish, self-centered addict I was, I didn't get married for many years. I met my husband on a mission trip and got married when I was 48, and wow, what an adventure we set out on. Anyway, I think, you know, he just didn't understand there was something wrong until after every big holiday, after every food fest, I would get the trash can from outside and, you know, vowing to change, I would take this giant gray trash can and I would start throwing everything in the kitchen and out of the cupboards that wasn't an abstinent food, that was, you know, a trigger food, which kind of meant that the cupboards were bare. You know, there wasn't anything I didn't binge on at one time or another, pretty much. But he, you know, he thought, oh my gosh, here I come, another resolution. And I know that he thought it was a little crazy. And as issues, you know, blended family issues came up, and my eating was like ready to just burst forth. My disease was just waiting for an excuse. You know, I discovered my husband had a very secretive addiction of his own. And when I discovered it, I flipped out. I broke things. I threw a fit. I acted like a lunatic. And then I decided, you know, I got a good case of the efforts and really sent my eating into overdrive. I mean, I was off to the races. Going through my fat pants in a week, you know, just eating out of control. Well, you know, he's hurt me. This is the excuse my disease needed. So flash forward, you know, 8 years, and you know, I've gotten recovered. I've found, you know, the answer in these 12 steps in this spiritual journey that I've taken with my God. And my husband has seen the changes in me, and he has gone into recovery himself. I thank God that God can make beauty for ashes and, you know, bring joy where there was sadness. And tears, and that this program has helped restore my marriage. We have a ways to go, but I'm just so grateful to God that being on both sides of this coin, the addict and the Al-Anonic, it's just been a blessing to have this program. And I will pass with that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa J.R. Stacy G., you're next, and then Jordan L. Stacy G.
Hi, this is Stacy G. from Smoky Medford, Oregon. My life several years ago before program was just awful. My husband and I had adopted a couple of girls from South America, and they had some trauma in their lives, and because of that, one of my daughters had a behavioral health issue. That combined with my control issues and my disease, it was a powder keg. It was awful. So she would act out, and then I would react, and it got really ugly. There were screaming matches. There were, there was yelling. There was slamming of doors. On both of our parts, but I am taking responsibility for my side of the street. So this thing about in desperation, we've even gotten tied ourselves, the drunk to end all drunks. One time I got home from the store or somewhere, and I saw a tequila bottle on the table, and it had previously been full, and it was now probably over half empty. And I walk in my bedroom, and there's my husband sitting on a chair, drunk, off his gourd, and screaming and yelling at the kids and everything. And my behavior, my chaos, had just prompted him to act out in that way. And he's not a drinker. He might drink once a month, a glass of wine or a beer or something like that. He doesn't get drunk. So the chaos that I was bringing into the home was causing problems that didn't just affect me. It didn't just affect our daughter that had the issues, or any of our other kids. It affected my husband too, and I dearly love my husband. And that was a scary moment for me, just seeing him so out of control. And I am so grateful now that I have this program and that I have recovery, and I have awesome relationships with all of my kids now. We have 6 kids through foster care, adoption, and birth. And, I'm no longer trying to control them. I'm no longer trying to control other people in my life either, or circumstances. I'm no longer upset when things don't go my way. I might be disappointed, but, I don't go, into a rage and start, screaming and yelling and being mean. It's just amazing what this program has done, and my husband and I have such a wonderful, peaceful life now. With that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Stacy G. Jordan L., you're next, and then Liz T. will be our final commenting person today. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning. Can you hear me, Mel?
I can. Hey, yeah. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. My name's Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, and super grateful to be on the line this morning. I haven't been able to be live all week, so I'm glad to just be here. I'm here. I'm alive. I don't know. I just wanted to say one quick thing, because I've been listening all week, and I've been, I've had like stuff I've wanted to say, but I've been listening to the recording. So I guess I'll just kind of like sum up all of it, I suppose. I'm this product of ism for sure. My family of origin is alcoholic.
my mom's drug of choice would probably be work, and my dad's would probably be food. And if, like, you extend out further, there's, like, alcoholics and drug addicts and compulsive overeaters and lots of mental illness and depression and suicidal tendencies and all this crazy stuff. And it's kind of weird sharing about it, because even just, like, even just telling you guys about it feels like some sort of, like, betrayal to them or something, you know, because that was always the deal. Like, you just, like, keep these secrets, you know, like, you don't really talk about them. I don't know, I guess that's what I started doing with my own relationship, once this disease was, like, full blown and in swing. And I am in a relationship and living with an alcoholic. He's in recovery and has been for a while now. But man, I was sure that he was a dry drunk, that the problem was not me and he was a dry drunk. I worked these steps, all the way through. And what I've discovered is he hasn't changed. His program hasn't changed. He's going to the same amount of meetings, talking to his sponsor, praying, doing, like, his thing the same way he's been doing it this whole time. He has not changed. But this relationship has entirely. And that's the only thing that's changed is that I've worked the steps. So it leads me to believe that I was the dry drunk and I was the problem. That's the only logical conclusion, right? So anyway, again, very grateful to be on the line this morning. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Jordan. Jordan L. The last share for today will be Liz T. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you, everyone, for your service on the line this morning, and welcome to any newcomers. My name is Liz T., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minnesota. And just reading through this, you know, the vulnerability of the writer, the admission of the insanity and unmanageability, it just gives me a lot of gratitude of how honest and open we can be in these rooms. We're as sick as our secrets. And if I can admit that I can be a grouch and a brainstorm, I can be that recovering tornado whirling through the lives of others. I can be recovered today, but I'm still recovering in these aspects of my lives, in my life, around emotional sobriety and relationships. And in this reading today, I saw that in desperation, we have even gotten tight ourselves, the drunk to end all drunks. And it just reminded me of, in Bill's story, the, you know, how dark it is before the dawn. We have the death of the food, and then we have the death of self as we work through the steps process and becoming more in touch with our authentic selves. And I'm just so grateful for that I had that gift of desperation, that I didn't want to keep going on like this. You know, please help me. We cried out in desperation, please help me. I can't go on like this. And that was like my step zero, my step one. The food was killing me, but so were my character defects and my people pleasing and my need and desire for control. And, you know, the joy killer nag wet blanket, that stood out to me too. You know, I can nag my husband to try to get him to do what I want him to do, but he can ignore me. He can ignore me and still not do it, and I can still be okay in God's image. I will still survive. I will not die if everyone doesn't follow my script today. And I get a lot of peace in that, because if I'm constantly living in dishonesty, trying to get people to do what I want, I get more out of touch with myself. That ego comes in and edges God out. And I start going towards the disease instead of towards recovery. And so I'm just really grateful for this reading today. I'm so grateful we're going through these chapters. it's just really opening up my eyes to a lot more of those layers that someone mentioned, the layers of the onion. So with that, I will pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Liz T. And that does conclude the recording portion of our meeting today. Thank you to everyone that shared their comments on those paragraphs. It was a great meeting, and I appreciate that very much. So let's see if we can't wrap this part up this morning by asking Liz T. to please read page 164 in our big book. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. And then stay tuned, and we'll follow up with a serenity prayer, and then we'll move right into greeting some newcomers. Good morning, Liz. Thanks again.
Good morning. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you,